Accession number 26752, Reel 3.
Nice. Oh, here we are. Here's a new disc. And this is Anke Bergman, and it's Reel 3. Most interesting what you were saying about the Judenrat. How about the Jewish police? Did you have special Jewish police in the ghetto?
Yeah, well, that was the biggest farce of all. They had nothing to do. I mean, the Jewish police was talked very badly of in various camps, which I can't understand, because it was just parading and doing nothing. I can tell you that because my husband worked there in it. And it had one advantage, that we were promised, on top of the first promise, that if you are in the ghetto wache, you will definitely not leave here. I don't know. They really didn't have anything to do. They didn't. At one time there came a former officer in the German army, half Jewish or something, who wanted to make sort of soldiers out of them. Now, it was the biggest farce I have ever seen, because they were exercising and marching and doing, but they never did anything else. Interesting. I can't talk about anybody else.
It's because one hears it say in Warsaw how brutal they had to be with the deportations.
This is I wouldn't judge that, because if you have an SS man with a gun behind you, you do whatever he tells you to do. So I don't excuse anybody, but not everybody is a hero. I have full understanding. It never happened to me personally, but this judging why, it's very difficult to answer. So I don't.
Did you think of Theresien, or do you now, when you look back with your experience of camps afterwards?
Heaven.
Was it a ghetto or was it a concentration camp?
It was both. But, as it was the showpiece, so in comparison to what happened afterwards, it was paradise. But this is totally subjective, what I am telling you, only from my own experience. And that the people who didn't have enough to eat and kept on dying and being in those places lofts or like sardines, this was unbelievable. But unfortunately, one gets terribly selfish. And if you could get a bed for your mother in a room with 20 people and not with 200, so you did it.
Yes, I dare say when you're in that situation and later in the camps, you have to adapt your behavior, don't you?
Unfortunately, you do. That's why you survive. And your mother is nearer than somebody's aunt. I'm being terribly honest with you. So it's so terribly difficult to judge that sort of behavior. But I wasn't embarrassed or anything interesting, because I did what I thought right, and looking back, it was right, and I didn't hurt anybody. But when we come then to Auschwitz and all that, and the couples, that's a different story. But again, I wasn't in that position to judge it. And you do all sorts of things with a gun in your back. I am not excusing them, because some of them were terrible. But on the whole, I don't know how I would have behaved. I don't.
When you volunteered, as you say you did, to follow your husband, hoping to join him, did you have any idea then, you know, leaving aside the name Auschwitz, but did you know there was a final solution, that Jews were being killed?
Not a clue. I didn't have a clue when we arrived in Auschwitz. Shall I carry on in?
Yes, if you could describe your journey.
Yes. Well, my husband left, and I was one of the first one to go of my own free will, and we went 2 days later. We were assembled somewhere, and actually we went in proper wagons, no roofless or coal wagons, but that was our transport. I don't know what happened afterwards. And we were like sardines in there, but still we were all young people who went of their own free will, and I can't say it was jolly, but I mean, I'm going to see my husband tomorrow, or I don't know when, and that was that. And we arrived on that famous ramp in Auschwitz, you know what I'm talking about. And by the time we passed through that entrance, and we were there, and there were these chimneys spewing smoke and fire, and the smell is unforgettable, and we couldn't place it what sort of smell it is. And there were people running in those striped uniforms. We didn't wear uniforms in Terezin. We wore our own clothes. And shouting and screaming, and the SS there in masses and dogs, and it was like bedlam, and you didn't know why. And out, quickly, and leave all the luggage behind, and come out. And we were formed into a sort of column. I don't know where I was, in which part of the column I was. It proceeded slowly, and there was this man, very good-looking man, who had gloves like gauntlets, sort of long one. Oh, I imagine that. If I dreamt that, I don't know, but I thought it was true. And he definitely had gloves. Here, there. No, but even that didn't mean anything, because so our parents and whoever, the children, will go in one barrack and we will go in another and we will see each other in an hour. But it was, this is hindsight, of course, not at that time, that people over 40 and under 15 went to one side and the sort of 15 up to 40 went the other side. But it didn't mean a thing. And these flames, you know, I couldn't go around. Steelworks, which are very near here, near Newport, for years I couldn't go around there because they were spewing this fire. I still can't. But you didn't know what it was. And I was with a friend whose parents were in the same transport, and they went on the other side, and we were then allocated to one of the barracks, and we came in, and there were already some people there it wasn't empty. And this friend of mine asked one of the girls, "When will I see my parents, or where are my parents?" And they started screaming with laughter, "You stupid idiot, they are in the chimney by now." And we thought that they all got mad, and they thought that we were mad, that we didn't know. But we found out pretty quickly where the children and the old people were. Old people, they weren't 50 or something. There they went. And there were 3-tier bunks there with nothing on it. And we were allocated, I mean, you had to be about 12 on that bunk, which was built for 6, and so we had to be like sardines, up and down. But that didn't matter at that time, and we were given one sort of mug, or biggish mug, for I don't know how many people, but without a spoon. No, but never mind, we didn't know that, and we were comparatively sort of well-fed from Terezin, well-fed, I mean. But we were young, as I said, and every young person had to do something to keep alive. So we did that, and that's why we were allocated the right column, because we were supposed to be sent away to forward, which we didn't know. But that was the only idea. They needed workforce, and they could do with the ones who could live for another 2 months under the treatment or something.
You were pregnant at the time.
It wasn't showing yet.
It wasn't, no.
Because that would have, I would have been in the other column.
How many weeks pregnant would you have been at that time, do you reckon?
Well, I would say not more than 6 weeks, or perhaps 8 weeks, but even that wouldn't have shown. And we were parading. While we were in Auschwitz, I jumped my subject again. While we were there, so we were parading naked in October in Poland, cold and mud and smell and no food and dysentery, and I'd fainting on and off because pregnancy or I don't know what, but my friends who, you know, these appels, these roll calls, well, something unimaginable. And for hours standing, and I fainted on and off, but they propped me up because that would have meant to go to the gas chamber again. I mean, you had to be healthy for that sort of thing. And the food, when they brought it, and it was just dirty water with floating something in it. And you were five for that one vessel and no spoon. No, but we were so stunned with all these news, which we had to absorb somehow, that it really didn't matter. Oh, to go to the latrine. I mean, there were latrines, let's say 20 in one row and 20 in another under one roof. So you can imagine what it looked like, what it smelled like. And this, what I'm going to describe now, didn't happen to anybody. This was just whatever the SS men thought of. So we were there doing whatever we had to do, and they poked us with long poles, not even give you time to do whatever you had to do. I mean, nobody told them that it was just, they had to do it. It was awful, and we just had those clothes on, which they gave us, just a dress or something, I mean dress, a rag, and clogs, and no, they gave us clogs only when we left, so we were barefoot. No, it was awful. And every 5 minutes, not that exaggerated, every 2 hours, there was a selection, so-called, because we had to parade in front of the Dr. Mengele and company, totally naked, of course. So you never knew where to put your hands, felt here, there. Or, and I heard him once say, this time very good material, as if cattle was sent to the slaughterhouse, and this time it was a very good material. You know, we weren't treated like humans. We weren't human either, because they shaved all our hair and everything. And that was one of the worst things. You wouldn't believe it, that shaving the hair was one of the worst things. It was the first thing which happened when they sent us to the proper showers, but we didn't know that there were other showers. We went to send to showers, and before that they shaved us. And I was with that friend of mine, and suddenly I hear somebody screaming in those showers, "Where are you, Anka? Where are you?" And I said, "If you are Mitska, I am next to you." I mean, it was dreadful. Because, I mean, a dignity, you can't talk about dignity, but you can't talk about anything. If you felt not human at all. Absolutely, they took all that away. And you cope with it as you can, or whatever. But anyway, after all these various selections, I spent 10 days in Terezin, in Auschwitz, and it was like 100 years. And the last time we were on one of those selections, being sent somewhere, and there was a building which I hadn't seen before, it was in a different place, and that was the only time I was really afraid that I'm going in the gas chamber, because I had never seen this building. And So we marched in, and that was the only time they gave us some food for our trip to Germany, which we didn't know, but we were sent away. And we knew, we really knew, that nothing could be worse after those 10 days. And we were put into coal wagons, but with ceiling or roofs, and locked in, and it was, if we were beside ourselves, that we are out of the hell. And the trip to Germany, back to Germany, took about 2 days, I should say, or something.
Could I just ask you a few more questions about Auschwitz?
Yes.
You mentioned Dr. Mengele. Was he the man with the white gloves?
Not they weren't white, but they were like gauntlets. Yes. I thought perhaps they weren't.
Yes. Was it Dr. Mengele?
It was Dr. Mengele. I was told afterwards he wasn't at every selection. But when a big transport came, so he wanted to see whom we chose for his experiments or for work in wherever.
That parading naked, was that a terrible thing for women to do, do you think? Given the era that, it's rather different young women today, perhaps. Would it have been very...
Well, as I said, you held your chest and you held your hand here and you tried to run like that. And they made rude remarks sometimes, but they weren't interested in us as human beings, which is just as well. And they didn't know that I was pregnant, which was marvelous, because that would have meant the end. And that's what I wanted to say before, that as my little boy died, he saved my life and my daughter's life, of course, because if I had arrived with him in my arms, they all went straight in the gas. So, there. I don't want to upset you.
And your husband, you'd gone to Auschwitz to meet your husband.
Yes. Well, I never saw him.
Your mother and your sister.
We quickly knew that what had happened. But
your husband as well?
No, my husband, I knew that he was alive because somebody saw him there whom I saw, and he was sent for work somewhere. I knew that. So he was alive. But I knew about my sisters and my parents and whoever else went there, that they had gone. I knew it within the first hour in Auschwitz. But you were so stunned that you were totally sort of beyond being upset, I would say. You took it in, you didn't believe it, or you did believe it. You couldn't believe it.
You were also saying earlier, Anka, about the Kapos you met, presumably in Auschwitz and other places.
About what?
The Kapos. The Kapos.
Kapos, I didn't know.
Kapos, yes.
Well, we didn't know at that time what Kapo is or not. We found that out only when we came to the barracks. And there were the one of the girls who had this better job, and she ordered us around, and she shouted at us and screamed at us, but she didn't do anything to us, and she had to keep it tidy. And I have no experience of any wrongdoing, or personally. I didn't like her, and she was rude, and she was loud, but she must have been there God knows how long, and she was still alive, so that was a miracle. From my personal experience, I can't say anything. But I know there were animals among them, like among other people, who treated we were the ones who can be treated like, not, you wouldn't treat any dog like that, but I mean, it was a spirit which was put together by the Germans to perfection. It worked like a dream. This, I am better than you, and I am higher than you, and all that. But as I was there only 10 days, so I didn't have a chance, I'm glad to say, to find out anything concrete. I don't know from my own experience.
But what is so interesting is you were there very late in the history of Auschwitz, weren't you?
Well, 44, autumn, yes. The end of 44. Yes. By then they started to already be afraid of the Russians.
Yes, and the Hungarians, presumably, and the Gypsies.
Well, they came just before us.
Yes. Did you hear anything about the Gypsies?
Not at the time. Not at the time.
Yes.
I've learned all that after the war,
yes.
Long after the war.
One of the last groups to come, I would think, from Theresien.
I think so. No, they sent people the whole of October. I was at the beginning of October. But up to the end of October, the transport from Theresien went to the east. And what happened afterwards? Well, they left Auschwitz on the 18th. The Germans left on the 18th of January, 45. Well...
So here you are, you're yet on another, you're still pregnant 10 days later from Auschwitz, and you're now going off to Germany.
On to Germany?
Yes.
In those coal wagons where there was just one bucket for doing whatever you had to do and nothing else. And we suffered from thirst. I can tell you, cold and hunger are most unpleasant, but nothing to compare it with thirst. That's really most dreadful. Your mouth dries out and it's like dry mud which hurts. I can't describe it to you. It was terrible. And we arrived in Freiberg in Saxony, which is near Dresden, and they opened the wagons and we all wanted water, and they gave us water, I must say, somehow. And when we arrived there, they put us on somehow we were transported to the factory where we were going to work, which was on a hill, an enormous factory, but we didn't know what we were going to do or anything. And we got in, and it was warm, and our quarters were sort of three-tier bunks, but it was warm. And there were bed bugs in millions crawling around. And it's not the most pleasant animal, I must say, but we were so delighted that meant warm and food, those two things. And you know, they were falling into our little mugs which they gave us. Each one had a mug which was marvelous. And by in the evening when you went to sleep, and by the morning there was a layer of mugs, of those bed bugs like that in that mug. But never mind, it didn't matter. They gave us something to drink and perhaps a piece of bread or something. And we worked in this factory and we couldn't understand what we are doing because we were riveting. I have never seen a rivet in my life or the riveting machine. And with my friend, she was working against me on that wing, on that, it looked like aeroplane tailpiece, what we were making, because it was, but it was much smaller than we would have thought an aeroplane would be. And then our workmanship, I mean, we kept on saying, but they can't put a living person in this machine which we are working. This is impossible. It won't hold. But they let us do it, and for what, with hindsight, for what they needed, it lasted for the one trip. The V1, V1's doodlebug, which we all found out only after the war. We were making the tailpieces of the doodlebugs, and we were riveting and riveting and riveting, and then it came to after the 18th of January, when Auschwitz stopped existing in the German sense, not the 27th when the Russians came, but on the 18th when the Germans left with those death marches. But I was spared that. And as it was after that, they couldn't send me back anymore because by then it was showing that I was pregnant. But
how
they couldn't send me anywhere.
How are you feeling, Anka? You know, having to do this work, which presumably... I imagine you were doing long hours.
About 12 or more, I don't know.
So you were standing for 12 hours?
And doing this heavy job, because that riveting machine is very heavy. And if you never have done it, so it's not. But what we occupied our minds with, because for the riveting you didn't need to think very much. We were cooking in our minds, and we were making cakes with 12 eggs and 4 pounds of butter. The more hungry we were, the more rich the cakes were. It was, and once we were again with my friend, and she said, well, we have made all these cakes, and now I fancy a banana or something, spread with jam and a chocolate icing over it. I have never heard such horrible thing in my life, but that's what we were doing. And this girl, who really wasn't very keen on food normally, but this banana with jam and chocolate with icing, I will never forget that.
But how were you feeling, you know, with the... Because how you would have been...
I would have been how... more than that. September, October, November, December, 5 months, perhaps 5 and a half.
And was the baby moving?
Yes. And
were
I thank...
Chewing? You were
well, I was like a skeleton by then, and a pregnant skeleton. But anyway, but then I was given a lighter work, so-called, as you asked about it before. So this time, as they couldn't send me off anyway, so they were very kind. And I was given a job of sweeping the factory, which was 3 stories or 2 stories, for 14 hours a day. And when I stopped, I started again. But, I mean, it was an easy job, really, because I can do what I wanted with it. But 14 hours a day with broom and bucket and broom and bucket, you get absolutely... you do it automatically, you don't think about it. And then we had to... Because, unfortunately, they built barracks for us outside the town, and then we had to walk through town not properly dressed and looking like God knows what not, and the people not being very friendly and sort of shouting and spitting. They didn't know who we were. We must have looked aside. I can't judge that.
So presumably they knew that there was slave labor then.
Well, that they knew something, but they didn't treat us any the better for it. Well, anyway, so that was that, which lasted until April. Are we there?
It's Anka Bergman, end of reel 3.
Right. Now, may I take this off for 1 minute?